Hi, it's Keith Bachman from Bank of Montreal, and Martin is going to surprise you, but I wanted to start on software. And you indicated IBM is going to grow. You anticipate growing at low single digits. If we focused on software for a second, you're making a transition now. All your software is moving to the cloud, so most of it will run on the cloud. If I think about SAP and Oracle, starting a little more than 2 years ago, have faced similar challenges. And while their maintenance business, or that 75% that you referenced, has been fairly steady, the transaction side has had tremendous growth challenges. So net-net, constant currency revenues have declined. So if I think about your software portfolio, it would seem to me that you're a little further behind in terms of porting your software to the cloud. So why wouldn't you, as you go more to a SaaS-based model, why won't you face growth challenges in software specifically? Just alone converting or thinking about SaaS-based implications?
Yeah, I think there are a few things conflated in there, which we'll talk about. And then we have software people up who can also talk about how this transition will work. Like Robert, I think, there's Robert, he's smiling already, ready to answer. But so let's talk a bit about the software business in general. First, remember, we do have a SaaS portfolio now, and that's growing quite well. We have a pretty large, and I showed you that, a pretty large annuity-based business already, right? So 70% of our software revenue is annuity-based, and that's done by deployment, so that will continue to grow as well. When we talk about now making our software available on the cloud, I think it's probably maybe important for Robert to describe a little bit about how that works from a client's perspective. What do they get? What do they get that they didn't have? What are they able to do? Because the idea of annuity-based and SaaS, I think it gets conflated here. So Robert, you want to spend a minute?
Don't get confused on, we didn't just start this, and this is like something we just announced today. We really thought it was time to bring it together and say, hey, the 100% mark reached. We started this years ago. So this is not a new phenomenon. There have been many things along the way that have already moved. So I view us ahead of those two, not behind those two in that transition. So Robert, go ahead.
Yeah, if you look at it, you go back to the entry points. There's people that are going to take their applications and they're going to run them on the cloud. There's also clients that want to build the application and build the new function on the cloud. They're still going to use the applications. They still will be on-prem applications. Then there are clients that are going to build their new applications and connect to their back-end systems. Those back-end systems, as you connect, will continue to grow because they're going to drive new workload. The workload will get driven from the cloud to the back end, but there'll still be requirement to grow the number of instances that they run for the middleware that's running the application itself. So it's not in when you're running a kind of an end user application, you move the whole application over. Here, there's really three different models. So we think the back end will continue to be driven by the volume and the new workloads that are now connected to the back end, because I'm still going to run my transactional systems and everything else in the back end. You'll see a combination of both. So we still believe there's some growth there.
And you know, do you want to? Yeah, Tom, I was just going to say, because you've seen this phenomenon on the mainframe of what's driven all that MIPS growth, right? It is all the stuff on the cloud that drove it back on.
It's the growth, and it's actually opening up more on-ramps into the highway. So as we opened up WebSphere, put it on the mainframe, opened up CICS back in the day, we found that by adding web services onto that, we got more calls onto our software, not fewer. It wasn't offloading. It was actually an on-ramp onto this technology. But I thought the other thing Robert might say is SAP moving to the cloud, interesting thing. SAP runs on
us.
Software. So SAP's movement to the cloud is also good for infrastructure as a service for IBM.
Yeah, you do know SAP selected us as their strategic cloud, right? So we've got many, many a client moving here.
Maybe just a follow-up, and I'll yield the mic. But if you think about growth, then what are the conditions in order to have software being a growing asset? What needs to happen for the aggregate software portfolio in the old definition to grow then? Thank you.
Well, I'd say a few things. We have, again, the dynamics that the team is talking about aren't necessarily going to drive a headwind, if you will, right? I think that's kind of the net message from what they said. What drives growth over the long term are really, for us, going to be a couple things. One, usage of the software, which we showed continues to grow. Usage of our software will drive growth over the long term. And then keep in mind that a lot of what we're building now, which is not yet in any of the data, a lot of what we're building now is software. So Watson Health is not entirely a software business, but it's a lot of software. Watson itself is software, right? So the growth in software in total And by the way, what we acquire tends to be more software. So growth in total, they're not necessarily facing a headwind from this, but the things that we're putting together, the solutions have a much higher software content, if you will, than what IBM on average has today. So those solutions are built around software.
And that flexibility will work itself off over time.
Nearly yes. Every acquisition we've made over the past few years has been a software as a service, and everything new we're developing in these new units is as a service.
Okay. Let's go to number one, please.
Jim Schneider from Goldman Sachs. Thanks for taking the question. I was wondering if you could maybe just follow up on the software question. Relative to the client flexibility, you pointed to that, especially in the top 250 clients, as being a major drag, and it's been that way for some time now. Can you maybe give some metrics or signposts in terms of the effect of that particular impact going forward, either in terms of total contract value or total license value with those top 250 clients? How much is kind of still remaining, and maybe you can talk about how much of that contract value has been elected to be flexed in any given year, like last year.
Yeah, you know, when we look at the data across that portfolio, boy, you couldn't get insight from looking at the distribution. What we do know is that what clients typically do is as they reach the sort of the capacity that they're anticipating they're going to need in the future, they start to get more active. Now, when we look at the data, some of them are at some of them are 10 points from that, some of them are 15 points from that. It's not that insightful. The difficult part, I think, that our clients have is they don't have visibility to the economic environment that they're facing, and they, quite frankly, don't have a visibility to all the projects they want to run. So within the portfolio, right, we have security, we have commerce,
Analytics.
Thank you. We have analytics. Data. So when a CIO sits down and thinks about his year, he or she is thinking, all right, I'm going to get these three projects done. And then they pick up the newspaper, and there's a security problem somewhere in the world. And all of a sudden, their board's saying, no, I know you thought you were doing that. You're doing this. So what you're really, what I observe in the behavior is that when there is not perfect, because visibility is never perfect, when there's good visibility to their environment, when there's good visibility to the kinds of things that CIOs will be asked to do, then they tend to start consuming more. When they have limited visibility to their economic environment, when they have limited visibility to the projects they have to get done, they tend to focus on the deployment and the usage. So again, we're thrilled because they continue to deploy and use our software. And that flexibility is the right thing for them to provide us. But without knowing every environment, without knowing everything they're facing, it's difficult to kind of predict exactly how they're going to behave. And the data we have on a client-by-client basis isn't that insightful.
Okay. Let's come over here to number four, please.
Ashwin Shirwaikar from Citi. Thank you for the presentation today. So question is really, when you adjust for the acquisitions, divestitures, FX, it still feels more or less sort of flattish company, not so much a low single digit company. So if by low single digit, do you mean 1%? Do you mean 3%? Because that makes a big difference to how you get to high single digits from that perspective.
Well, I can tell you what low single digits means, 1 to 3. So when you look over 10 years, we grew about 1%. Right now, that 10 years had a financial crisis in the middle of it. It had a lot of things. So I don't know that we're always going to have a financial crisis. I don't know that that's always going to be stuck in the numbers. And by the way, that was a market opportunity that was about $1.2 trillion. And as John described and a number of the team described, now we're looking at much, much bigger opportunities. So historically, the last 10 years, it's been one. That's had a lot of macro events in it, including a financial crisis, including, quite frankly, the substantial reduction in investment levels in the emerging markets. That's really, if you looked at the biggest assumption difference that we made 5 years ago versus where we wound up over the last year or so, it is how much growth we would get out of the emerging markets. Single largest, about half of, we got about half out of what we thought. And so when we think about the emerging markets, we still think they're good investments. We still think that it's the right place for us to be. But relative to our assumptions and where we thought we'd be, that's like half of it. Now, we don't know when that's going to come back. We'll continue to invest. But the answer to your question is low single digit means 1 to 3. We did 1 over 10 years. but that had some substantial macro events relative to where I think all of us thought were when we started the decade at 2005.
But always, I mean, this question always comes companion with moving to high value. So, I mean, could we have, like I said, guys, if we'd wanted higher growth, we wouldn't have divested some of the businesses we divested. They were growing. And so that's more what Meters is. We're always looking to refresh, reinvent. And it isn't for just a shareholder. It is for our clients, right? So that you keep moving to what the next thing is. And I go back to where I started. That's why we're 105 years old. And what we did was cheese slicers originally, not what we do today. So that is the companion to the growth. It's the high value side of that.
The follow-up on
one question.
The follow-up to that really is that as your strategic initiative piece grows, you also start facing sort of a law of large numbers in that space. So you can see a pretty rapid decline in the growth rate of that piece. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the concern here.
Well, nobody should assume that our strategic competitors are going to grow 26% forever. That's kind of your point. You know, we're not assuming that either. Our financial model doesn't rely on them growing 26% forever. We are trying to engineer the shift so that we can get the business into those growing areas. As John pointed out, those areas in total, if all you do is look at the enterprise IT piece of that, that's kind of a GDP grower kind of a thing, right? Now, we're making a shift. We started with our incumbency. We started with a different mix than a lot of the industry, so we've got we're catching up rapidly because we're growing now 2x the market in those areas. We are not going to grow 26% in the strategic imperatives. Now, part of what we've talked about, I hope we've made the case that we're also moving out of just focusing on those high-value areas because there's a lot of opportunity in other parts of the world. So we are not going to grow strategic imperatives 26% forever. Our financial model does not rely on
doesn't
us doing
it. Doesn't require it.
Okay, hi, number two, please.
Hi, it's Kulbinder from Credit Suisse. Just a couple of questions. Martin, in terms of this promise of growth for IBM, I'm assuming it's constant currency going forward. The question is when, because for the last 5 years, we haven't really seen it. We're not going to see it this year. And the question maybe for Ginny linked to that is that if we're still having this discussion in a year's time, you're promising growth at some point in the next 2 years, you're not still growing. Does M&A have to become much more significant to achieve that? And the second question is going back to something to clarify from earlier on today. The one thing that I've observed is as the SI business has been growing, the rate of decline in the core has accelerated. I think your chart showed that today as well, constant currency again. Is that decline in the core business really that predictable? And is that what surprised you negatively over the last couple of years somewhat? Could you comment on those two?
Thanks. Yeah, two things. Your assertion on does M&A have to play a broader role suggests that all we want to do is get back to revenue growth. And as I think we've said a number of times, Ginny just said it again, we are just not that focused on just driving revenue growth for the sake of revenue growth. We have a high value model. So we're focused on where can we drive value for our clients, which will drive a lot of value for our shareholders. The framework for that means that we can drive growth in areas that are high value. They tend to be growing, by the way. That's why they're growing, is because they're high value. But it's not the answer, the framework for how we think about deploying capital is not where can I get the most growth. We would have done many, many, many different things if all we did was care about getting back to revenue growth. That is not the model. So I do feel like we have a portfolio that can grow. I do feel terrific about all the capital we deployed last year to build out a health business. This is the Watson Health business, by the way. I don't even think it's had a birthday yet. Has it, Deborah?
No.
Hasn't had a birthday.
No, April.
So,
April.
April is its birthday. So this is a business that with our core technologies of Watson, our prowess in research, our visibility to the marketplace, our point of view on what's going to happen, the support, quite frankly, of our shareholders who support us do certain kinds of acquisitions, who say we have an opinion about what you're good at and we have an opinion about what role you can play, and then the ecosystem and the partnerships we've built up, that's a very compelling growth story, and it's very high value. That's how we think about it. We don't think about it as, should I go buy something so I can print revenue growth? That's not how we think about it. The second question, and since my answer was so long, I forgot half of your second question, but your second question was around the core, and yes, the core declined was minus 11. That's what our chart showed versus minus 7. Boy, I'll tell you, Kulbinder, the faster we can move into these new areas, the better our margins. So we want to move into those areas because there are better margins. By the way, the stuff we're coming out of had good margins, but not as good. Not as good. So Bridget will say, Bridget's up here. Bridget will say, do I want to get back to growth? No, Bridget will say, I want to shift my business as fast as I can because I'm creating more value for my clients in those new areas, and that's where the opportunity is. That equation will work out over time. But yes, in many ways, the minus 11, we're pushing that thing to make sure it keeps going down, quite frankly, because we want to get into these new areas. Now, I think you got to recognize that we also do some really important work for our clients, right? So we have to recognize that, again, they're declining markets, but
you saw how much is annuity, right?
We have to keep delivering what the promises we make. So we don't think about growth for the growth's sake. We're not going to spend our shareholders' money just to get print revenue growth for 4 quarters, only to wrap on it at a different time. We're always going to deploy capital to high value, and we're going to try to drive that shift to get to move that core as quickly as we can.
Okay, let's go to number 3, please.
Okay, thank you. Lou Misocia, CLSA. So let me sort of try to ask, I guess, the same question maybe in a little bit of a different way. You know, are we getting to stabilization this year in the sense of the last 2 years, obviously, have just seen a continuous decline? And I guess the thing that's been most frustrating is that it just sort of moves around in the sense of software looks like it's getting better, then all of a sudden it gets worse. You know, services looks like it's getting better, then it gets worse. So, Ginny, do you think we are stabilizing this year? And I guess maybe if you could give us some comments as to what areas do you feel most best about, what areas might you still be a bit worried about, especially as we're falling off the mainframe cycle?
Yeah, well, Lou, I wouldn't, you know, as you look year, we just talked about this, year on year, it actually hasn't gotten worse. At constant currency, it has improved year after year. So that is the
free
fact.
Cash flow and EPS.
And now, mind you, we are investing, right? So we've been really clear. On the other hand, when we talk about where we want growth, we're going to invest for that growth because we're not going to manage it. We've always said that, and you know it. We're managing for both the long term, the medium term, and we're going to make the investments we need so this company moves to the next era. And you've seen us pull forward a good number of these investments, obviously, in their timing. And so we purposefully, in giving you this data today, is hopeful that you can see there are signposts. Because when people will say, why are you so confident? I'm like, I have the data in front of me. You can see these signposts. You can see the pieces moving. And we're really being clear on the pieces that where we need to move something faster or what we still have work to do. And so I would say you could see, as an example, you said services. Well, the global technology services business, I mean, that's a year of signings growth, that's revenue growth, that is, in services, the backlog is $120 billion that had growth. That isn't something you do in one quarter, right? So you see that thing progressing, you see the you see the hybrid in the number of them, so we're giving you that data to show it. You've seen, obviously, in the systems business, so I'm being a little repetitive of what we've tried to show all day, different signposts for each one of these, and then you saw the mix of the strategic imperatives. So you'll be able to, when you say, how comfortable those strategic imperatives, they're going to continue to grow, right? Because we're continuing to both put investment and to put focus on those and move into those areas, remix our skills to get there. So I am very confident we are on the right track here and that, you know, as we continue, we'll continue, you'll continue to see improvement in those businesses.
Okay, number 1, please.
Katie Huberty, Morgan Stanley. Why now provide transparency? I mean, you talked about all of this last year. Mm-hmm. You know, Watson isn't new. The cloud initiative isn't new. Typically, companies don't provide transparency unless there's an inflection point that they want to show to investors. And yeah. Then I have a follow-up.
Yeah. Yeah, so let me first and then in here a second. Is that, first off, as you know, you report your segments as you run your company. And so we've been working to change this, right, to move into this new, as you know, as David said earlier, this is as a significant era to us as the mainframe was, as we move here. So we've been making these organizational changes, and we're now positioned. So you need to do it with that. We also think that when you see the data, you'll share our confidence. And so we've now positioned the organization. So you needed that to be able to do the change in the reporting. And the number of moves we've now made in aggregate allowed that organization change to be put in place and for there now to be what I would consider stable signposts that you can see consistently going forward.
Yeah, the only thing, sorry, Katie, the only thing I would add, as Ginny said, this is something we've been, you know, working on as we build the way we go to market and the way we have ourselves organized. And the other thing I'd add is that we did spend, or we will by the end of the month, spend more in acquisitions than we have in any 12-month period. We think that it's important that investors see where their money's going, and they're going into these spaces. So it's the segments reflect how we think about the business. The segments reflect how we run the business. And quite frankly, the segments reflect our point of view on where the business is going, and that is to be a cognitive solutions. We just spent a lot of money to build a health business. We spent money to build out an IoT platform. We see a cognitive solutions business, and we see the need for industry. And so it reflects, as everything Ginny said, the way we run, the structure, but also our point of view on where the industry is going. And we did spend a lot of our investors' money, and we feel like we got to make sure they can see our progress and where that money is going to pay off.
Yeah, to the point today, it was interesting to see all the divisions rowing in the same direction as it relates to cognitive computing. But then it's surprising to see that solution software within that segment's flat. And so why not break out Watson? It doesn't have to be big. I think SAP HANA, when they first started talking about it, was low single-digit percentage of the business. It's actually hard to see the impact of Watson in those segments.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead, and then I want to finish because there's a. Let me start with it, Katie. I feel very, very strongly on this. That look, we are building an era, a platform, an industry, and we're making a market with it. And I'm going to nurture that thing. It is you can see it coming through in many different ways. And there have been many competitors. They don't disclose these segments for a decade. We will in due time. But for now, I am going to nurture that market. I am going to protect it. We have got a huge competitive advantage, and we're going to keep moving with it, right? Before the world can, you know, opine on all different viewpoints there. And so we're going to keep doing that. And because, as you say, I agree with you. When you see that number, you know, Martin and I have talked about that on the cognitive solution segment. You got the solution number, and it's flat. When within it, and this is where he's going to take over, within it, all these high growth areas, but we do have that counterbalance. We got this big analytics platform that's got that flexibility point. And that's not obvious, obviously, when you see the data, obviously, you know, when you see the data flat like that. And so that, to me, is the one point, but I balance it with my trade-off with making a market that is going to endure for this company for the next decades, and I'm going to make that trade-off in the short term to protect it and nurture it and grow it. Do you want to add anything?
I wouldn't mind a couple things. One, Watson as a set of technologies. Watson's a business. That's what David talked about this morning. But Watson as a set of technologies permeates more than just that Watson business unit. So the definition of this is Watson is probably not as simple as maybe some people are thinking about it. Secondly, a segment denotes, and we have this structure, we have this challenge in the way we have segments now, but if we were to report Watson, say, right now, I wouldn't want to give anyone the impression that, like, Watson does this on their own, right? We're bringing Watson solutions to market with the help of GBS. We're bringing Watson solutions to market with the help of research. The cognitive solutions definition sort of sits at the right consolidation point, you might say, where we can now drive investments in a segment, knowing that we also have to make investments in skills for GBS. But now we have visibility, investors have visibility to where we might drive investments and the way we think about it. As you start to deconstruct those too much, you really can't drive an investment because you can't recognize all of the solutioning, if you will, that has to happen across IBM. So there is a the reality of what Watson is. It's much more broad than, you know, the technologies than maybe just one offering, but more importantly, the IBM as a solution company and IBM as a solution gets lost as you start getting down to a single product and maybe not as reflective of the way we make investment decisions as, again, the logical consolidation point that we're showing now.
Okay, let's come over here to number two, please.
Thank you. John Roy from UBS for Steve Milanovich. Oh, one quick question. We've talked a lot about the core. Why not accelerate divestitures in the core? Why not move faster to the higher margin stuff?
If we thought, look, we always, you know, I think we've done, and you give us credit for this, we've done a really good job of getting ahead of our divestitures, pruning the portfolio, moving it when it's low value, and even in the face of pressure for revenue. So we'll constantly keep looking. If we thought we had something that we want, I mean, we will do them when we believe it is necessary to do. So Many of these businesses you saw, they're very essential to what we do, what you saw presented
they
up do. Here.
And they earn, you know, reasonable, they earn pretty good margins. And I heard this.
They do good work for clients. Yeah. I mean, this is the biggest thing. It's about what's value in the eyes of our client.
Right. We spent the day talking about what we are. We are a cloud platform cognitive solutions company. As we divest of things, you also become not something. Well, we can't just be not something. We have to be something. And those things that even though some of them are in that core and they may be in declining markets, they help build that solution, if you will, that clients are looking for. So they do valuable work. And again, you can't be not something. You have to be something. And they are part of what that something is. That doesn't mean that they are forever, but that's why we see it now and for the foreseeable future. It's not like next week we'll change our mind about it. They are valuable parts of how we deliver value to our clients.
Okay, number four, please.
I just had a couple questions that just kind of build on some earlier questions. Just regarding Watson, I get your point about that having an impact that's broader than that unit itself, but are you still thinking about this $1 billion sort of standalone revenue goal for Watson? Is that something we should still think about at all as investors? And then separately, just want to clarify on the seat licenses. You've been talking about that flexibility in software for, I don't know, at least 18 months, and I'm just wondering if you can kind of confirm that inventory has indeed declined. You're seeing some evidence that that's sort of getting burned up and consumed. Thanks.
Well, it's getting consumed because that's what's driving the annuity revenue higher. So that's a short answer. Yes, it is getting consumed, and they're deploying more, and that's what's driving annuity revenue. We showed you the opportunity statement. I mean, I'll let John, he does a nice job on this, but the opportunity statement for the things that Watson's going after, both David's part of the Watson business, Watson Health, this is billions and billions and billions of dollars of opportunity. And, well, I should say it differently. This is hundreds of billions of opportunity, and we see this as billions of dollars of business for us. Now, a lot of it is an as-a-service business, so it builds over time. As you know, that takes time. John's talked about some of the statistics around how many clients we have and the growth we're seeing on engagements. This is an opportunity that I would expect, and we are investing to drive billions of dollars of revenue to IBM over time. Absolutely. I don't think my opinion hasn't changed. I don't think anybody on stage has a different opinion about the billions of dollars that Watson will drive for the IBM Corporation. John, did you?
No, I would just add, and in the discussions around lunch, I spoke to several of you. You know, over the last year, as we've engaged with clients in many, many industries, it's become very, very clear to us now what the business models are and what the demand for this kind of technology is. So, you know, that $2 trillion and what we can get out of that, it's crystal clear that that's a huge new opportunity for us. And that clarity has really come about over the last year as we've jumped into healthcare, IoT, insurance, financial services. It's in every single industry. Again, it's not just a digital transformation, there's a cognitive transformation that's going on in these industries.
Around here, please. Number one.
Thank you, Tony Saccarnaghi from Bernstein. I have one financial question and one strategic question. On the financial side, your dividend's about $5 billion a year in cash. You've spent $6 billion in the last 7 months on acquisitions. That's $11 billion in cash usage. I think your free cash flow is supposed to be $10 to $11 billion this year.
11 to 12.
11 to 12. So how do we think about the model going forward? Are you going to take on more debt? Can we continue to count on dividend increases? Or should we be thinking of more subdued acquisition levels on a go-forward basis? You had historically guided for maybe $4 billion a year in acquisitions. How do we think about that? And I'll ask the second one after.
Good for our memory.
I think it's a good question in this forum because I think our investors are really interested in capital allocation. So I'd say a few things, Tony. One, we've said that we expect to be able to grow the dividend going forward. When we look at the businesses and their profit generation, I think I still feel very comfortable we'll continue to drive dividend increases over the long term. Secondly, we've returned capital to shareholders in the form of share repurchase. We said within our model, within that high single-digit model, that we would expect 2 to 3%. I think we still do that as well. We have been aggressive in acquisitions in the last 12 months. Now, are we going to do that same level over the next 12? Not likely. Not likely. I don't think we need to, by the way. But having said all that, I do feel as though if we saw something we really thought was going to drive value for the firm and drive value for a lead we have, then sure, I think we got plenty of flexibility to go do it. But right now we see probably, I think your words were more subdued. I see a more subdued level of acquisitions over the next 12 months. We do have a fair bit to digest here, right? Our health business hasn't even had a birthday yet, as I mentioned. So we do have a fair bit to digest. So that will be more subdued. But I still see continued dividend increases. And we still will return capital to shareholders through share repurchase and, you know, keep that share count coming down as well. Was that the strategic one or the financial one?
Financial one. I don't even know how strategic this is. But just, again, thinking through the software business, so kind of roughly 70% of it's recurring. About half of that is mainframe. Mainframe, I think, was down last year. The other half is maintenance and support, and I think that was up a little bit. But if your software licenses are down 14%, isn't that just inevitably a leading indicator of where maintenance and support is going? And I know you're going to say you have extremely high renewal rates, but the fact is, if people aren't buying your software, over time they're not going to buy your maintenance and support. They're just going to be moving. And so if unless you're really confident that that license picture changes, and I hear you saying it might attenuate, but you don't really know, don't we have declining license revenue, declining mainframe software revenue, and then downstream declining support and maintenance revenue and software, and why shouldn't we be worried?
You want me to?
Go ahead, you okay. Start, and then we'll.
So I think, Tony, a few comments I'd make. First, the phenomena you're describing on declining transactions is a kind of a 90-day window versus a 90-day window in a prior period, and it excludes, if you will, the phenomena of what's going on in the client's environment, which is how much are they using. When your transactions are going down because they're moving off your platform and they're moving someplace else, then the phenomena you described is accurate, that if you don't sell the licenses, they can't deploy them. That's not what we see, though. What we see is our largest customers deploying licenses so we continue to grow the SNS. When they have visibility to their environment, when they figure out what they want to do next, I'm confident they'll come back in and stick with the platform. Now, I form part of that confidence from the competitiveness of our offerings, and we look at outside those large clients, and it says the competitiveness of the offerings, I wouldn't say it's universal. Of course, the team's always working on making sure that they've got every offering as well designed as possible, but the competitiveness of the offerings on a portfolio basis is growing outside those large clients. So the phenomena you describe is accurate. It's just that it's not our experience. Our experience is that we're growing in our smaller clients, those who have the
not
least
even
access.
Smaller. They're outside the top 250.
They're outside the top 250. They have the least access to the portfolio.
Yeah.
And those who have the broadest access are deploying and growing their usage. So that's our experience, and that's my expectation. Anybody? No, Robert, yes, you're
good great. Answer.
Okay, well, we are.
I do. We're all done?
We are beyond our time. We are.
Pat, let me make a comment.
Yeah, please do.
As we wrap up, look, we spent a lot of time with you today. So let me thank you. You're all still here. You've all dedicated a lot of time to better understand the IBM company. So we appreciate that. Many of you as our owners, we appreciate you as our owners. We never take that for granted. Those of you that just work to understand us, we appreciate the time you invest in us. And that, as I said, I couldn't have been more excited about today. It is a chance for us to pull this together because every era we do become another company. And we are becoming this cognitive solutions and cloud platform company. And hopefully you've heard it from our clients themselves. As I said, they are the final arbiter. And so, again, we appreciate, remember, it is about being a high-value company in our mind, and we will all stay for, I would say cocktails. I'm not sure. Is there? No, okay. So a drink of some sort. Mocktail or whatever is contemporary here. And so we'll be here. I would encourage you to, I hope, many of you have seen these demos, and we would thank you. I hope the information we're going to provide you is, in fact, as I said, compelling to you as it is to us. And Martin said you'll get much more of it coming up in the next couple of weeks here. So thank you very much for a long day with us.